it's Kim Plumley, and you're listening to number 0433, the Stuff Out Program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File Program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there. Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File Program, number 0433. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File Program, Dr. Brent Trusco, president of International Association of Innovation Professionals, talks about the future of innovation.
Being able to come up with an idea and do something about it is easier now than it ever has been before. I heard something on the radio recently, and I haven't researched it yet. Something like a company had been in business for 2 months, and one of these large companies had already bought them for, $1 billion. And I thought, well, now there's a great opportunity if you have the idea. But, you know, we've got technology now. We've got venture capitalists out there. If anything, we'd probably have too many opportunities because I think some really good ideas are getting lost in the noise.
Clinical forensic psychologist Dr. John Huber is back on to talk about the effects of forcing kids into playing sports.
I think we got a double-edged sword now. We got people, we watch the Tiger Woods of the world, these little five-year-old kids who are so good at sports, and then they become very successful as adults and very wealthy. It just really motivates parents to push their kids. Then you have the second side of this. You got parents who always want to be that star athlete and felt that if they'd have started earlier, or if they'd have the right motivation from their parents, they would have been successful. So they start pushing these drives and belief systems on their kids.
Relationship coach Frank Kermit on the pitfalls of getting back into an old relationship just for the holidays. It's often a quick fix to dealing with family expectations.
The idea is that if somebody is single going into any holiday season, they're going to be facing family. And it's just easier for someone to say, yes, I'm with someone, I'm with a partner, or bringing somebody along to those family functions so that you don't have to hear things like, oh, don't worry, someday you'll find someone. Or, you know what, since you're single, there's someone I want to introduce you to. Or, well, why are you single? Are you just too picky? What's wrong with you?
And there's lots and lots and lots of Stuff File news and, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later. The person who told you this was show number 0433 was publicist Kim Plumley from Publicity Mavens on Vancouver Island. Thank you very much, Kim, for doing the guest late on this edition of the Stuff File Program. Full disclosure, folks, Kim is one of the many people who have been very instrumental in helping me to book some of the guests that you hear on this program from week to week to week, and she does an excellent job. So thank you for that too as well, Kim, in addition to doing this week's guest slate. Here on a program that is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? Why pay for a motel room for your amorous encounters when you have a vehicle? And hiring a babysitter is just throwing away money if that vehicle has a back seat. All that's missing is plenty of booze to set the mood. Sound like a plan? Well, first let's share this story. Witnesses of a single vehicle crash were shocked to see a naked man and woman emerging from the wreck. Washington State troopers said that they have arrested the driver, 23-year-old Michael Tonkin, who was having sex with the naked woman, 23-year-old Daisy LaRocque, before slamming into a tree. According to police investigations, the man was driving down State Route 7 with a 3-month-old baby in the back seat. The man and the woman were both drunk and naked. The couple was having sex when the man missed a curve and drove off the road. Seconds later, the car slammed into a tree. Witnesses at the scene saw the naked man and woman emerge from the wreck. Both appeared to be intoxicated. The man and the baby were not injured, and the woman suffered broken bones and was transported to a hospital. Tonkin was charged with driving under the influence, vehicular assault, and child endangerment. Now, do you ever stop to ponder that this isn't the first time this couple has tried this, and perhaps the conception of the child in the backseat was also a moving violation? And by the way, just for logistics, did this act really require both of them to be completely naked in a moving vehicle? I'm just asking for a clarification.
Yeah.
Anyway, a Florida man shot himself while arguing with another man during a road rage incident. When officers arrived at the scene, they encountered a man who suffered a gunshot wound to the leg. The incident unfolded when two drivers got into an argument. One of the men felt threatened by the other and pulled out his weapon. While waving it around, the gun discharged. The gun owner suffered a gunshot wound to his leg. The victim was taken to a hospital where he was treated for a non-life-threatening injury. No charges have been filed because the weapon was legally owned and the victim felt threatened. Okay, we've just had two very different car stories. I guess the moral here is, while on the road, the choice between making love or war is neither. In Australia, train passengers were shocked, I say, to see two men having sex late at night. Melbourne police said the officers were called to the Flinders Street station after the two men, aged 22 and 25, stripped naked and had sex. The two men, who were not identified, were charged with willful and obscene exposure. They were also charged with theft for allegedly stealing potted plants from Melbourne Town Hall. Witnesses at the scene told police that the two men stripped naked and danced around the potted plants, which they allegedly stole earlier in the day. The two men then performed sex acts on each other. Some people laughed at the two lovers, but one elderly woman yelled at them to stop their public display of love. A video of the incident was uploaded to the internet, where it went viral. Police arrived at the scene and forced the men to get dressed. You know, usually the theft of potted plants doesn't lead to indiscriminate public nudity and sex. Maybe the theft of pot plants, but not potted ones. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, a California man who suspected his neighbor's dog of defecating in his driveway checked his home security camera and discovered the real culprit, an Amazon driver. Nemi Batista of Sacramento said he found a large piece of fecal matter at the end of his driveway when he arrived home, so he checked his home security camera to see if it came from his neighbor's dog. Batista said he was shocked, I say, when he reviewed the video and discovered a delivery service driver contracted by Amazon had squatted behind the door of their U-Haul and dropped the deuce. Batista said a delivery service supervisor visited his home to apologize. He was in shock when we saw the size of it, Batista said. He ended up scooping it up into a plastic bag but didn't take it with him. An Amazon representative said the company contacted Batista and the driver has been removed from their position as a delivery driver. Notice the story says the driver has been removed from their position as a delivery driver. It doesn't say, however, that he was actually fired. Just clarifying that point. Anyway, Batista was given an Amazon gift card for his troubles. Okay. Imagine yourself working PR at Amazon, and you're the one who has to decide what the gift card value should be for someone complaining that one of your drivers doesn't have intestinal tact or perhaps a poor diet. That's a fun day at the office, isn't it? Yeah. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, shall we? What has Star Trek taught us about innovation? Well, there was flip phone wireless communicators, weapons that stunned and didn't kill, lasers used in surgery, wireless and wrist computers, unmanned vehicles, computers we could talk to that talked back. When Star Trek debuted in 1966, Viewers were either amused by or enthralled with the wild concepts and innovative technology that creator Gene Roddenberry envisioned for our future. So, what's in our future now? Dr. Brett Trusko is the president of the global nonprofit International Association of Innovation Professionals. He joins us on the line right now from Houston. Hi, Brett.
Hi, how are you?
Just tickety-boo. Thank you very much for being on the program with us. First of all, let's explain what is the global nonprofit International Association of Innovation Professionals.
Well, it's a long story, but basically I had been sitting around and got annoyed. This was about 5 years ago at commercial after commercial running on TV saying that they were the most innovative this, they were the most innovative that. And I said, if we don't professionalize innovation, then in 10 years, everyone will just laugh and they'll think it was a joke. So the association has certification exams, learning management courses, chapters all over the world to try to build a body of knowledge and try to define, you know, mostly for employers. So when they do a hire, they know that they're going to hire somebody that actually have the skills that they say they do, much like an attorney, a certified public accountant, or a nurse, or someone like that.
Do we have any gee whiz moments anymore? And the reason why I bring that up is I'm a person who is at the tail end of the baby boom. So I grew up at a time when, as I mentioned, watching Star Trek, seeing man go to the moon, seeing innovations that take place, and seeing science fiction movies that were so well made that it opened up our ideas about possibilities. I think to my grandparents, who grew up in a time when they couldn't envision the idea of man going to the moon, and the idea of automobiles was something that was still foreign to them. So when these things came along, there was a golly gee, wow, is that possible? That's amazing. Whereas for my generation, it's more, well, we kind of expected that what took them so long. And I'm thinking it's more like that for younger generations that have followed.
Yeah, you know, it's really an interesting question because I think they're still out there. You know, I think when, you know, you had mentioned Star Trek. Now, I actually had this conversation with my driver between Abu Dhabi and Dubai. And I said, you know, the problem is today I came home from Dubai to Houston. It took, you know, 20 hours. Next week I have to go to Istanbul, so I'm going to stay home for 4 days, turn around and go back. And I said, I really want that transporter. Now, I'm not sure that, you know, the physics actually ever are going to make that work. But, you know, a self-driving car, never mind that there was cars that now you might have these that self-drive. Maybe it's just we're so used to change happening so quickly now that the gee whizzes are a little harder to do. But this stuff is amazing stuff that you can do these things.
But the
I think they're still coming. I just wish I knew what they were so I could invest in the right place.
But the lack of the gee whiz things coming along, I mean, the other side of the coin the point I was trying to make is, are there more innovators today because there are more people who can dream the possibilities that these things might be done and get people to go along with their ideas and maybe work with them, as opposed to generations ago where someone came up with a far-fetched idea and their first inclination from everyone else was, maybe we should lock them up?
Well, actually, you do make an excellent point there. I think that being able to come up with an idea and do something about it is easier now than it ever has been before. Now, you know, there's software may be changing slightly, but, you know, all the people that think that Google and Apple are so smart, a lot of their innovations they get these days are small companies. And I heard something on the radio recently, and I haven't researched it yet. Something like a company had been in business for 2 months, and one of these large companies had already bought them for, you know, $1 billion. And I thought, well, now there's a great opportunity if you have the idea. But, you know, we've got technology now. We've got venture capitalists out there. If anything, we probably have too many opportunities because I think some really good ideas are getting lost in the noise.
Are innovators getting younger?
No, it's interesting. There was a young man who was entering his PhD program at a think tank in Washington, D.C. last year, and he actually he and his team did a study, and he said that the average innovator was about, I think it was 44 years old.
Wow. In studying innovation, and I guess by extension you study innovators, is there something particular to the makeup of an individual that makes him or her an innovator or leads them down that path?
You know, I want to say that anybody can be an innovator, but what I see more than just the company giving them permission to innovate. So, you know, let's say they're innovating inside their company. It really does kind of take a little bit of a stubborn personality who says, I've got an idea, and everybody tells them that it's a terrible idea, and they do it anyways, and later on everyone says, oh, yeah, I knew it was going to work. and I see a lot of those kind of folks. But there's more of those kind of people now. There's more opportunities to not have to just fit into that mold and just follow your way up the company. And some of it's because companies are allowing people to get out of the track. We're flatter organizations. You have better ability to communicate with decision makers. And another part of it is just more opportunities to raise money if you've got a good idea.
In your estimation, what role, if any, does government play in innovations? And by that I mean either in the funding of it or in the research of it. Or does government, or should government not play a role in innovations?
Well, I think government's critical to it. You know, I'm a, as well as doing the association, I'm also a professor at a couple of universities. And what I'm afraid of is there's a lot of places in the world where they're recognizing Asia, China, the Middle East, where they're putting more money into research. And this would be for students to learn more about engineering, computer science, and that type of stuff. And let's face it, innovation in a lot of respects is getting more complicated. You really do need to know how to do something. But in the United States, I think we keep cutting funding for higher education. I think that's going to hurt our innovative capability in the long term.
Do you think innovation comes from, you know, the old saying, necessity is the mother of invention? Somebody who comes up with an idea because they're seeking an answer to something that is already an issue within their own lives?
Oh, yeah, 75% of the time. Somebody sees something that frustrates them and they come up with a solution to it. I see it time and time again.
Now, you mentioned earlier that you wouldn't know what to look into the future, you know, otherwise you'd know what to invest. But I'll try and get you to, you know, look at your crystal ball a little bit. What are some of the directions you see innovations in the future making breakthroughs?
So I think, you know, there's a lot of people who are really afraid of artificial intelligence and the big what if about artificial intelligence. And as you really move forward, you know, we're talking people who are afraid of the Terminator, right? That someday the machines will decide they don't need us any longer. But a lot of, as we move forward with artificial intelligence, is going to actually create a lot of these innovations. You know, never mind the social questions of what are people going to be doing for a job when all the jobs can be done by robots and or artificial intelligence. That's, you know, that's an issue for another day. But, you know, even now, this is something that is enabling a lot of the innovations that we have, is this early artificial intelligence. You know, I have an Amazon Echo. I love it. It's not really artificial intelligence, but I couldn't have done this 5 years ago. And then you start having apps that you can attach to it, apps that attach to phones and computers, and pretty soon you've got, you know, your food being delivered any time of night just by talking to your Alexa. And so as the artificial intelligence increases, not only will it allow us to do more sophisticated tools, but it will also, I think Alexa just heard me, she just, but we'll have more sophisticated tools and we'll have lots of opportunities that come out of being able to build smarter devices to do things for us around our house. You know, a lawnmower that you can just tell it to mow the lawn and it'll go do it. That'll be an innovation that'll happen at some point, I think. It'll know where your lawn is and it'll go take care of it for you.
History looks back and says that you know, there was so much that came, that there were so many steps that we made forward during the Industrial Revolution. Would you say that the period of time we're in right now, going back to 10 years and maybe going forward another 10 years, is the greatest leap in innovation that we have seen as a species?
Oh, yes. It's just accelerating. And I'm actually glad you make that point, because this is one of my favorite things to talk about, is one of the things that we have to do now is the industrial age made everyone specialists. And I'd even say that the information age didn't even last that long, because now I think we're turning into something like an innovation age. And I think the most important thing for people at this point in life, because you see some of these, you know, these great entrepreneurs that don't finish their college educations, but what they have is they have a curiosity, and they have this ability to be a polymath, or a Renaissance man, as some people call them, know a little bit about math and a little bit about computer science and a little bit about engineering and a little bit about business. And this gives them the ability to be innovators by being more curious and more broadly focused in the way they think. And I think it's going to be a wonderful age for art, for science, for technology, for innovation as we move more towards that.
That's a positive note to end on, and unlike any of those dystopian science fiction movies I see coming out all the time, Brett, I thank you very much for being on the program with us.
Okay, thank you.
Dr. Brett Trusko, president of the global nonprofit International Association of Innovation Professionals. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0433, and you'll find the link to his site. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File program is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Sign up and find out about our rewards program. Being a patron doesn't have to be a long-term commitment. There's absolutely no obligation. You could join today and end whenever you'd like, but the time we have your support would be so greatly appreciated. We'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show and even your ideas for rewards. Join us for the ride. Join us at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram. You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's radio that's now gluten-free.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk about forcing kids into sports. Plus, we'll talk about relationships during the holiday season. And, of course, we do have an idiot of the day coming your way here on a program that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make the show an even bigger and better radio experience. And before we get back to the Stuff File news, I just want to mention a quick note about my book, Great Conversations, My Interviews with Two Men on the Moon and a Galaxy of Stars. It's available, as you know, but it's also the holiday period, as you know. And my publisher, Bear Manor Media, is having a Christmas sale. This week, you can buy my book or any of their titles and save 30%. Remember, inside the pages of Great Conversations, you'll find some of my celebrity encounters with Oscar winners like Carl Malden, Cloris Leachman, and Christopher Plummer, Emmy winners like Ed Asner, Michael Moriarty, and Lindsay Wagner, Tony winners like Carol Channing and Julie Newmar, and a host of TV icons like Buddy Ebsen, Bob Denver, Dick Van Patten, Gary Coleman, and more, plus two guys who left their footprints on the moon. And again, at 30% off. So go to BearManorMedia.com. You'll also find the link on my website at TheStuffFile.com. So buy the book. It makes a lovely holiday present. And at 30% off, you can afford to get more than one. Anyway, let's get right back to the stuff. Just before the movie started, 200 people evacuated a cinema in Osnabrück, Germany, when a seated customer tried to open a bottle of beer. Now, it's common in Germany for theaters to offer alcoholic beverages, but they usually open the bottles they serve. It's unclear if the 29-year-old man brought the bottle from home and forgetting to also bring an opener. His solution, he tried to pry the cap off with the canister of pepper spray he was also carrying. The cap was stronger than the canister, which split open, contaminating the entire theater. It was chaos, the manager said, as the audience fled with tears streaming from their eyes. I wonder if the movie they were hoping to see was a tearjerker. And officials say a man trying to flee from a Philadelphia prison halfway house by hiding in a dumpster had to be freed from a garbage truck. It took firefighters almost 2 hours to remove the bags of trash and free the man from the truck's compactor section. Officials at the Kintock Group house say the man hid in the bin outside their facility. It was emptied into the truck at around 5:30 a.m. The man had been taken to a hospital. There's no word on his condition, but he could be seen moving his arms on a stretcher after the rescue. The halfway house serves as an interim stop before offenders re-enter the general population. So, I'm guessing that means he is not re-entering the general population. Yeah. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, you know, I have shared Darwin File stories for almost 30 years now, but this one really takes the cake. A Russian man has died after posing for a picture with a hand grenade after taking the pin out. Alexander Sasha Chechik had sent an image to his friends showing himself holding the grenade moments before it detonated, killing him instantly. Police say that he had sent several images to friends where he posed with the hand grenade and that this indicates that he had not intended to take his own life. A graphic police picture shows the appalling carnage. Moments earlier, one friend had messaged him saying, "Where are you? Are you okay?" He replied, "Depends on what okay is in your understanding." He sent a picture of the grenade in his hand with the pin removed. The friend told him, "Listen, don't do stupid things. Where are you?" Police said they believe Chechik expected the grenade would not explode as long as he didn't throw it. As he had also sent pictures to other friends, police have categorized his death as an accident, not a suicide. The Russian Investigative Committee is probing the incident. Yes, the Darwin File, because the tree of life is often self-pruning. And remember, grenades are not for selfies. You've been warned. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Dreams of multi-million-dollar contracts, Olympic glory, and college scholarships have many parents pushing their children harder than ever to play sports. Kids are being entered in sports leagues at younger ages. Some are forced to participate year-round in the hopes of creating the next superstar. To talk about this, we are joined once again by clinical forensic psychologist Dr. John Huber. He's the chairman for Mainstream Mental Health, which is a nonprofit organization. He joins us on the line right now from Texas. Hi, John.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Just tickety-boo. Nice to have you back on the program with us once again. I remember back in the day, the old joke was, if you want to make it rich, tie your son's right hand behind him and teach him how to pitch left-handed.
That's right.
So, has it gotten worse nowadays with parents and sports?
Well, you know, I think we got a double-edged sword now. You know, we got people. We watch the Tiger Woods of the world; these little five-year-old kids who make it, who are so good at sports, and then they become very successful as adults and very wealthy. And it just really motivates parents to push their kids. Then you have the second side of this. You got parents who always wanted to be that star athlete and felt that if they'd have started earlier or if they'd had the right motivation from their parents, they would have been successful. So they start pushing these drives and belief systems on their kids. And a lot of times these kids are just doing it because the parents are making them do it. They really don't have that psychological drive to want to do that, and it's pretty scary sometimes for these kids.
So I guess the most important thing to point out or to watch out for in your children is make sure it's something they want to do, right?
Yes. Now, you know, there's certain things we are supposed to teach our kids, like commitment and following through with something and things like that. So, you know, that's different of, for example, making them, hey, you know, you want to get a black belt in martial arts, so let's keep you motivated through that. But once you get the black belt, you can stop. That's a lot different than, hey, I want you to compete in the Olympics, and you need to go all the way through and keep going and keep going, even when the kids are just devastated by it and it's no longer a choice of theirs at all.
Okay, so let's look at the downside of this. What's the damage caused here?
Well, you get division between the parents and the children, and the kids start feeling like they're not being heard, and they lose faith in their parent. One of the things you got to have is an ability to have open communication, whether you're a spouse or a child. You know, you need to be able to have that in your family.
There is also the problem of, especially if the child isn't necessarily as proficient as your parents, as the parents would like that child to be, or as proficient as the child wants to be, there could be a self-esteem problem too, could there not?
Oh, significant self-esteem problem, and then the belief that they always have to win because they're doing this for the parent, not for themselves. And, you know, it's a hard message to send for parents. Hey, you to understand and learn about committing to doing something. You know, you said you were on the basketball. The basketball team's not doing very well, but you're having to work out really hard. You need to stay through the season instead of, hey, you know, just win every single time. And that's what the kids think parents want. And that's not always the case. So you got to be able to communicate.
So it does have repercussions that go beyond the sports involved for both the parents and the child.
Oh, yeah. And a lot of times the parents can't or won't see it until it's too late. And, you know, you got to be able to listen and sit down and communicate with your kids and say, you know, I don't want you to go to the Olympics, but you agreed to play on this team and you need to play through the season. And then we can talk about doing something else next year.
Now, what about the difference when it comes to parents with multiple children? Does that change the equation? Let's say child number one is really proficient and really does really well in sports, and they're pushing him or her into whatever sport it is. Second child comes along and really has no interest, but that kid gets caught up in the tornado that is the first child's extracurricular activity and is therefore following in his or her footsteps, even if they don't necessarily want to.
Well, and that becomes a problem, especially if the first child is relatively proficient in it. Not only then do you have the family, but you got the school, the coaches, everybody else saying, oh, yeah, you know, you're going to be even better because, you know, you had a role model and all this kind of stuff. And it becomes very damning to that second child or maybe the third child coming along there. So it can be very problematic.
I've never wanted to be Cooper Manning.
Oh man, I never even thought of that. So you just said that, but exactly that is not a place to be. Yeah,
and
unless you like baseball.
Yeah, and for those who have no idea what I'm talking about, Cooper Manning is the brother of Peyton Manning, of Eli Manning, and the son of Archie Manning. So it's
Hey, you know, maybe he should take up hockey. That would be good, because if they start arguing with him, he just, you know, stick them, you know.
although to be fair and full disclosure, one of the things that was Cooper's problem was he had a physical disability with a spinal problem that didn't allow him to play football beyond high school. So he avoided it that way. But
well, that's good. I mean, that's not good, but I mean, you know, it gave him an out that he didn't have to perform to that level. And because that can be such a serious thing, and you lose your sense of identity and you don't know, you know, who you are, and that's a scary thing for all these pro athletes. They finish playing these sports because they age out at like 30, and they don't know who or what they're supposed to do with the rest of their life.
Generally speaking, because I mean, when we started talking about this, I mentioned multi-million-dollar contracts and the like, and people have this motivation for putting kids into sports with the idea of dollar signs down the road. But sometimes it's not even just that. I don't want to throw my parents under the bus, but, as you know, right, everything before a but is a lie, so I will throw my parents under the bus. They got me into piano when I was a young child.
Okay.
I played piano for 4 years. I can't begin to tell you how much I loathe that instrument to this day. Because no one ever asked me if I wanted to play the piano. And it's not that they thought I was going to get rich playing it. They just thought it was something that that I as a child should do. And parents do that quite often for the right reasons, but you've got to take into consideration what the child may or may want, even at a young age, right?
Oh, you should. And one of the things we do is we're kind of a musical family, and you know, there was a time in my life when I thought I was going to be the next rock star, and so we got lots of guitars and instruments around the house, and I always play for my own pleasure, and I hope to get that to my kids. And, you know, one day my son goes, hey, I want to learn. So we got him his guitar and all this kind of stuff. And daddy tried to teach. Now I've taught other people, other kids, and I had no problem. But all of a sudden, there was a different dynamic when it was dad teaching his own kid. And my son's like, nope, I'm done. And he came to us about a year later and said he wants to learn piano, speaking of pianos. And so we started looking around. We found this amazing woman who, she has some very strict rules. He's not allowed to practice more than 15 minutes at any time.
Wow.
And we're like, what? You know, I used to sit and, you know, I could sit for an hour or more, you know, in a room with the door shut. And she goes, how did that work for you? Well, you know, it didn't work very well. I switched instruments to something else, just kind of like my son had done. And she goes, well, let me do this. I'm, you know, you're paying me to be his teacher. Let me be his teacher. And man, that is exactly the ticket, because he would walk out and he would start playing and 15 minutes go, okay, get off, you're through. And he's like, but I come back later. Go get out of here. Go do something else. And now the guy's playing stuff like Billy Joel, and in fact, we're getting ready to leave here in a little bit to go to a Dickens at the Strand celebration on the coast, where he's going to be singing all evening tonight and all day tomorrow. So it worked. And now my daughter's like, I want to play guitar. So instead of me doing it, I called one of my friends who actually is a professional musician and travels and tours with different bands and his own band and stuff. And he's done amazing things with my daughter. And I just had to step back and let other people be the guide, as opposed to me being the instructor. They can just watch me have fun playing, and it motivates them to go practice their own with their own instructor.
Okay, so getting back to the sports, using that analogy in sports, I mentioned the fact that sometimes kids participate in sports year-round in the hopes of creating the next superstar.
Right.
Is part of the problem quantity? Should you just cut down the amount of sports that your kids play, even if they want to do it?
I think there is a lesson to be learned in that musical example, and I think that for some kids that's what they need. For other kids, what we've got to do, and I see this as a problem in the future, is, you know, we don't see the pickup games of basketball and football and baseball in the neighborhoods anymore, because they're inside sitting on their Xbox, sitting on their computer, and they've got all this screen time. And I think a lot of physiological things are going on. They're adolescents and young adulthood. That's where all the bone density gets developed, through playing sports. So sitting on their computers, they're losing that opportunity. And instead of having bone density issues in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, some of my physician friends are concerned that it's going to start kicking in maybe even as early as the mid-30s, but definitely 40s, 50s, and 60s. So as parents now, I think there's some reasons for us to get our kids outside. So how do we moderate that? Well, my kids have to pay for computer time by doing physical activity.
Ooh, I like that. So basically what you're saying is, because we're running out of time here,
Yes.
idea is to get your kids out to play, but don't make it too structured or too much.
Exactly. Now, you'll get those kids who decide, this is what I want to do, and you need to sit down with them as go through a season or going through a certain level of training, whether it's a black belt, brown belt, whatever. You have to talk to these kids about that commitment. My godson has just been put on the Junior Olympic team for surfing, and this guy is, before school, every day surfing. He surfs year-round, whether it's 20 degrees outside or whether it's 120 degrees outside, and it's what he wants.
John, always a pleasure to have you on the program. Thanks for being with us once again.
Thank you so much. Always a pleasure.
Dr. John Huber, chairman of Mainstream Mental Health. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0433, and you'll find links to John's site. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo-Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. Have you ever heard about the two corporate CEOs who settled a potential legal dispute by arm wrestling? Here's the story. 20 years ago, two different airline companies discovered that they were using the same exact advertising slogan. It was quite a coincidence, but both executives knew that only one company could keep using it. They could have easily sued each other, as so many do these days, but they chose another option instead. The CEO of Southwest Airlines, who happens to be a lawyer, agreed to a public arm wrestling match with the chairman of the other company. So, who won? Well, they both did. Southwest actually got to keep the slogan, but the event was used to raise money for local charities, too. So, the companies solved their problem and earned a lot of respect in the process. Let's be fair, this is a great story because it shows how two leaders said no to a messy legal fight and turned a dispute into a lesson on creative problem solving. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamerica.org.
Here's a penny for your thoughts from the Stuff File program coming to you from Montreal, Canada, a country that doesn't have pennies.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk about relationships and something called cuffing. What is cuffing? Well, just stick around and you'll find out. Be patient. And we also have an idiot of the day coming your way a little later on here on a program that is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, I got one more Stuff File news story that I want to share with you before we get to our next guest. It's right here. It's right now. A driver called the Cameron County, Texas Juvenile Justice Department kitchen to report a delivery. 800 pounds of fajitas. What fajitas? The agency doesn't serve them to its inmates. What fajitas? The ones the driver has been delivering every week for 9 years. It turns out department employee Gilberto Escamilla had the day off, and district attorney Luis V. Ciennes says Escamilla knew what fajitas exactly. He was stealing them. He would literally, on the day he ordered them, deliver them to customers he had already lined up. Now, all told, investigators say Escamilla, who was arrested on felony charges, misappropriated $1,251,578 worth of fajitas. That's a lot of fajitas. Now, how does someone get away with this for 9 years? We know Gilberto is going to jail. That's a given. But shouldn't somebody else be on the hook for sloppy bookkeeping somewhere along the line here? I mean, wow. Anyway, let's get to our last guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Currently, we are now in the middle of what the Urban Dictionary calls cuffing season. That's the period during the fall and winter months when people who would normally rather be single or promiscuous find themselves, along with the rest of the world, desiring to be cuffed or tied down by a serious relationship. Now, back on the program to talk about cuffing is relationship coach Frank Kermit. He joins us via Skype from here in Montreal. Hi, Frank.
Hi, Peter. How are you?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks once again for being on the program with us. So we're deep in the cuffing season. Is this something that affects more men than women or vice versa?
I got to tell you, it has to do more, not necessarily with gender, but what I see in my practice of coaching with family expectations. The idea is that if somebody is single going into any holiday season, they're going to be facing family. And it's just easier for someone to say, yes, I'm with someone, I'm with a partner, or bringing somebody along to those family functions so that you don't have to hear things like, oh, don't worry, someday you'll find someone. Or, you know what, since you're single, there's someone I want to introduce you to. Or, well, why are you single? Are you just too picky? What's wrong with you? Sometimes it's just easier to hook up with an ex-partner of yours, especially if you just broke up going into the holiday period. So it's just a matter of, okay, look, can we just, let's see if we can work this out. And what ends up happening, of course, is that they go through the holiday period. They're not happy. There's some resentment. There's some anxiety. You know the person is not happy. You wonder, well, is the person just going to dump me right after the holidays? That it's not a very good feeling. And, of course, once the holidays are over, it might be time, especially here in North America, we have the holidays going into December. And, of course, by Valentine's Day, people reassess and say, you know, this is just isn't for me. And they're going through a similar heartbreak at a different holiday.
Is it a situation where there's a boomerang effect on several occasions? Like, in other words, if somebody is going to get deeply into the cuffing season now, are they actually likely to repeat it again the following year if they're not in another relationship by that point?
People are their repeating behavior patterns. And if they're used to getting into relationships for the wrong reason, for example, never mind if the person is compatible, I just don't want to be alone for the holidays. Well, chances are if you find yourself single the following year, you're going to follow through on the repeating behavior pattern that you did the last time. So, yeah, people can repeat this type of situation, and sometimes even with the same ex-partners.
Isn't that what you've just described, though, a typical description of someone who is codependent? And wouldn't the other party recognize this unless they themselves are codependent?
Well, no, first of all, I'm not a psychotherapist. I'm not a psychologist. So I am not qualified to diagnose anybody as being codependent or not. What I can say is that it definitely is the sign of an on-again, off-again relationship, which is not emotionally healthy. For every reason that you're together, there's another reason that you keep breaking up and going away. Sometimes it's an inability to cope with, you know, negative emotion. You don't know how to handle your frustration or your anger or your resentment. You end up blowing up at your partner. You end up breaking up with your partner. And then when you calm down, you end up going back together because you really do have a love and an affinity for one another. You may not know how to manage a relationship, but you do know what you're feeling in the moment. So if you are in this procedure, if you are in this habit of on again, off again, well, it's going to happen for you all year long. And that's not emotionally healthy in the long term. Because again, instead of learning to simply deal with the intense emotions you might be feeling, you're already in the pattern of taking the easy way out, of walking away from the situation and taking days, if not weeks, to figure out what it is you want and then to reconnect. It's not a good thing.
Okay, so I already brought up the negative possibilities of what this relationship could be all about. What about the positive side? Let's look at it from an optimistic point of view. Is it not a possibility that in some cases getting back with an ex might be the best thing for you? You've both had an opportunity to grow as individuals while you were apart, and maybe coming together is just what you needed in the first place?
Look, I'm a resident hopeless romantic, so I'm always hopeful that people be able to reconnect and move forward, especially when I'm doing couples coaching, where my goal is to try and make the couple, because nobody comes to a coach when they're fighting within a couple to figure out how they should break up. They're trying to figure out how can we make this work, and if we can't make this work, then how do we manage a separation? But their primary goal is how do we stay together. So is it a good thing when two exes get back together? It really depends on why they broke up. And if one or both people in the couple have gone through some sort of catharsis, some sort of change.
Now you've written this article, you've written articles on the cuffing season. There are other articles out there about the cuffing season. Reading the one that you wrote, you specifically talk about the holiday season when it happens. Mm-hmm. Others I've noticed combine the idea of the holiday season, but also the idea of the fall and winter months, because that's when people start cocooning. So which is the stronger draw? Is it the holidays or is it the season? And the reason why I bring that up is, as you know, in the Southern Hemisphere, they have the holidays at the warmer time of the year. Winter is starting in our summer, and in the winter time, it's Christmas for them. Or at December, rather, it's Christmas for them in the summertime. Is cuffing a situation that happens in the Southern Hemisphere at the same time as it happens here?
When we're talking about weather patterns and how they may affect a relationship, when the weather is warmer, people are more inclined to be a lot more adventurous because they're more inclined to go out and be willing to meet people. And in areas that tend to get colder, you still have those diehards who are willing to go out, meet people, have fun regardless of the weather. And then you have those people who really don't want to travel through the snow and the ice and so on. And they may be tempted to do the cuffing thing and finding an ex. So is it a factor? Absolutely, it's a factor. What is the greater factor? The greater factor is even people in warmer climates who are about to face a holiday season are feeling the pressure that they don't want to be alone for the holidays. Is weather a factor? 100% weather is going to be a factor, but it's not the only factor. And the stronger motivation, at least as far as I see from my client base as a coach, is that the holidays are a significant time of reflection. They're a time when people are getting together. And it's not a time when people want to be alone. Those who suffer from any sort of, whether it's mental illness, whether it's emotional distress, or people who are suffering in poverty with financial situations, the holidays are a very particular time when everybody feels a little bit more hurt, because it's significant. There's a significance to the holidays that it's a time for celebration and a time of coming together. And if you don't have someone to share it with, you feel that lack of presence ever so more.
Okay, so let me ask you this then, last question. What do you say to your clients? And I'm asking this from two points of view. What do you say to people out there who might be thinking of getting back together with their ex? And what do you say to people whose exes are lurking around wanting to get back with them? Is the advice to these two parties different or the same?
Okay, if you're in the position where your ex wants to reach out to you and you're wondering whether or not they legitimately want to make things work, or if they are maybe just suffering from cuffing season and are looking for a warm body to be with during the holiday season, my advice is, why did you break up? Look at why you broke up. And if you're okay with giving the person a chance, if you truly believe the person has changed or you've changed whatever it was that maybe have pushed that person away, then yeah, it's okay to give that person a chance. But be mindful that the time you're going to put into that is time lost if it turns out to be the wrong person. Learn your lesson, move on, and if you have to learn the lesson again, you may be losing time. For the other person, the person who's saying to me, hey, I want to get back together with my ex because we're going into the holidays, my advice would be very careful, because you are actually better off spending the holidays alone than making the mistake of getting back with your ex for the wrong reason.
Being alone could be part of a growth period, could it not?
Exactly. So let's say you're going into a holiday season, which is typically something that, I've never been alone for this particular holiday period. Well, maybe some time alone to reevaluate the choices you made that got you there. Because you've made a series of choices that led to you being alone. There were red flags you missed along the way, or maybe you saw them, but you ignored them. So maybe you do need to go through a rock bottom and experience a horrible holiday season and use that, as you said, as a step for personal growth so that the following year you don't have to deal with that again.
Excellent advice. And if people want more advice, where can they find you, Frank?
Okay, everything you want to know about Frank Kermit is at franktalks.com, franktalks.com. All of my ebooks are there, all of my audio programs, sign up for coaching. I'm a great guy, and I'll be like your big brother helping to guide you through the world of dating relationships.
Thank you very much, Frank, and I'll be the first one to say it. Happy holidays to you.
To you as well, Peter. All the best.
Relationship coach Frank Kermit. You can check out his website at franktalks.com to find out more about what he has to offer and also his upcoming events. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0433, and you'll find the link to his site. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Time now for the idiot of the day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. The Stuff File presents the idiot of the day.
This is the Grey Cup edition. Hamilton, Ontario police say they tracked down two men who had stolen a city truck on Grey Cup Sunday night because they had stopped to watch the game just after doing it. Police say officers were called to a break and enter at the Glanbrook Township Roads Department at around 7:30 p.m. The two men smashed out a window and stole tools from the stockroom, then took off in a stolen City of Hamilton truck. Police then tracked down the vehicle at the Checkered Flag Bar and Grill in Mount Hope. Officers went inside and found the two men. One of them had the keys to the truck inside his pocket. They just went inside and watched the game, said Constable Lorraine Edwards. A 44-year-old Glanbrook man and a 48-year-old Glanbrook man were both charged with breaking and entering, possession of burglary tools, and possession of stolen property worth over $5,000. Now, why? Oh, why? If you're going to steal a marked Roads Department vehicle, would you stop and park it at a pub to watch the Grey Cup game? One reason, and one reason only. You're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program, number 0433. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0433. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as PA Holder, and don't forget to check us out on patreon.com, where you can become a patron of the program. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, GDPR Revolution 99, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes, streaming on Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Today's broadcast could be heard directly in your home, car, or wireless device, or on your computer, so you can listen on an outpatient basis. For those of you hearing this show directly inside your head, please adjust your medication.